listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
This is Pharmacy Crossroads with your host, community pharmacy business veteran, the road trip guy, Bruce Neeland. Community pharmacy is at a crossroads. Pharmacy owners across the country are evolving their pharmacy businesses and making a bigger impact on their communities. Bruce talks with the most innovative community pharmacy owners, pharmacy industry experts, and people who are passionate about the business of pharmacy and its impact on community healthcare. Pharmacy Crossroads is a member of the Pharmacy Podcast Network. And now, here's our host, Bruce Neeland.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Bruce Neeland again with another episode of Pharmacy Crossroads. Today, I've got two pharmacists who are national experts on changing the payment model for pharmacies and finding new ways to bring money to the bottom line. I have Tara Fund. She is with the AssureCare, the AssureRx division of AssureCare, and Jeff Harrell, who is the CEO of Cascadia Pharmacies. Last I knew, they had about 30 pharmacies in the Pacific Northwest. Jeff, I'll ask you to take a minute and tell my listeners a little bit about who you are, and then Tara will have you introduce yourself, and then we'll get into the meat of this program. So, Jeff, the floor is yours.
Sounds great. Thanks, Bruce, and thanks for having us. Like Bruce said, my name is Jeff Harrell. I am the CEO of Cascadia Pharmacy Group, which is a network of pharmacies here in the Pacific Northwest. We cover three states at the moment, and are looking to expand and basically keep independent pharmacies independent and keep community pharmacy in communities. I am pretty plugged into this industry. I'm president-elect for NCPA. So in October, I will be the president of NCPA, which is the organization that represents about 22,000 independents nationwide. And I also sit on the board of directors for our buying group, as well as our contracting PSAO group. So love pharmacy. It's my passion. And thank you for having me on, Bruce.
Glad to have you. So Tara, take front stage.
Thank you, Bruce. So I'm actually a pharmacist by training, as they say. Somehow found my way over into the technology space. After a long haul with Kroger Health, I was the first community-based resident out in the West Coast, Southwest Washington area. And since then, kind of found a love for creating clinical programs and community pharmacy and really being able to help spread them in an effective manner. So I ended up with Kroger working across the country on different clinical initiatives and medical billing pilots and really evaluating how to standardize and improve efficiencies of clinical operations, as well as implement new innovative programs. And now I work with AssureCare, and I help the pharmacist provider journey from start to finish. And we were lucky enough to work with a batch of early adopters and really learn the intricacies of everything it takes to build a pharmacy clinic, a full, robust pharmacy clinic with services, in-network providers, using an EHR with revenue cycle management components. And have also been lucky enough to work with CPSN. I'm part of CPSN Oregon and Washington. And so I'm able to negotiate alternative payment models for stores in those two states and have really strong payer relationships too. So along that journey, I've been working with Jeff and his group of pharmacies as well to start to think about how we can really improve the efficiencies of every community pharmacy. Everybody's a little bit different and everybody has different strengths and opportunities to improve efficiencies. And so it's been really exciting to bring those clinical programs and new ideas and hope and inspiration back into community pharmacy.
Well, buried in all of that is the idea that clinical programs can be provided, are being provided in independent pharmacies, and payment is following that. But the one issue, you mentioned the word credentialing a time or two in that introduction, and I will tell you, I'm a little bit confused. So I know that there's credentialing that needs to happen with certifying that your employees have been trained with, you know, rules and laws and regulations in pharmacy practice. What's credentialing mean in the provider space? Talk to us a little bit about what credentialing is, who does it, and who needs it.
Yeah, absolutely. And funny enough, what you just described is actually what is called privileging in the credentialing world. So the first step of when you're going to be a provider of any type, nurse practitioner, physician, pharmacist, who's going to become an in-network provider with a medical plan for reimbursement. And traditionally, you'll bill each time you see a patient, but there's also standardized monthly payments for you to manage a roster of patients, as well as typically pay for performance incentives. So that's kind of how your traditional healthcare provider clinic is set up. To be able to participate in that contract, they have to credential you, which is essentially confirm that you are a legal provider. So it doesn't say you can or can't do anything. It's just essentially confirming that you are who you say you are. You have no sanctions. You are trained. You have the appropriate certifications that you claim, and that you have peer references and confirmed work history. So it's basically really confirming your CV in a very simplified manner. There's different types of credentialing. Direct credentialing is what we really see today in community pharmacy, which means that you obtain all your information, a really, really robust CV, if you will, or a provider application. And then you go to the health plan and you say, I want to become a network. And they say, okay, for us, I need XYZ information from you and these supplementary components. And so what we do.
Let me slow down for a minute, because you said something again. This is for payment in the medical side.
Correct. Yes.
So it's a whole new arena. So yep. I'm sorry, keep going, but I wanted to make sure people knew that.
It's a good point, and especially because we do say credentialing of a pharmacy often for the PBMs. I mean, that's been going on from PSAOs for years.
Right.
And so this is the pharmacist provider. So it would be Jeff himself, Jeff Harrell's information that we would be submitting for enrolling with that medical plan to become an in-network provider and participate in all these innovative payment models for clinical programs and things that he's doing every day in his pharmacy.
And that's great. So that puts you in the hot seat, Jeff. Where are you credentialed and what's going on in your pharmacies in this arena?
Well, he's not really credentialed himself.
Well, yeah. Come on, Tara. Now, I think I got the floor now, right? Bruce, we have worked with Tara and her group, and we're starting to do this. You know, in 06, when I first bought in, you know, about 2 years into that, I realized that if we didn't get to some scale and build out a network, you know, at that particular time, you know, clinical services and that weren't like a hot topic, but we all were trying to do immunizations and do, you know, cholesterol testings and hypertension and all those kind of things. And we were doing those within just the realm of our normal pharmacy work and getting paid, you know, whatever you get paid for a flu shot, but nothing more than, you know, nothing more than that, and giving away that, you know, the blood pressures and different things. And so, you know, as we got to scale, you know, the landscape has changed. And for, I'd say the last 5 years hard, but probably 10 years, we've really been pushing on clinical services and change the payment model. Well, I know that Tara's going to poo-poo me, but unfortunately, and I mean that unfortunately, because a lot of people have tried and there's been some success. Filling the prescriptions is still the generator of the bread and butter that makes the machine of the pharmacy work. And so, mm-hmm. you know, we haven't been able to shake that. And I don't think we ever will be able to shake that. So we have to meld these two together to some degree and be an enhancement of one another. And actually we're starting to show some movement there. I mean, but we'll get into that a little bit later. But when I realized that we needed to have a network, that's when we grew, you know, our pharmacies and created Cascadia Pharmacy Group. Because now what's happened is your primary care physicians are leaving the industry. I mean, or they're going somewhere else, and or they're leaving these small communities. And the pharmacist is now becoming that primary care point of contact for these patients. Almost, you know, a pseudo urgent care type situation. And we've given it away for free. And now, you know, with the amount of scripts that we're filling with the pharmacy closures and the mergers and the reimbursement being so poor and the pharmacies going out of business, we're filling more prescriptions than we ever have. So we have less time, but yet we have patients in there looking for services that are disappearing as well for similar reasons on the medical side. So, you know, we have, I think we are as a group, have a group credentialed and contract in place with United Health for Washington. And I don't know if we crossed into Oregon yet. Do we, Tara? Or was
it's
that
just Washington?
Yeah. But so a blanket for our Washington stores. And, And that relationship started back way back when I had a problem with Optum paying us properly, or they actually did a whole readjustment or realignment of their pharmacy provider network. And I believe they're in Minnesota. Don't quote me on that, but they did that from their desk chairs in Minnesota. They realigned what they felt what pharmacy should be a network in rural Washington. So as you know, as a young pharmacist, I started to get my feathers ruffled. And a few phone calls later, I was introduced to the medical director of United Health, who we became good friends with. Him and I became good friends and good colleagues. And he helped me adjust that and fix that. And so that relationship carried over to when he retired to the new medical director. And it's allowed us to get this contract and to start working with them on some things. We're still adjusting to how we're going to get paid and what that's going to look like. But we do have a contract in place, which is super exciting. And again, that goes back to what I say really runs life and business is relationships. And that relationship is what opened the door for this 4 or 5 years later.
Well, and I mean, we are talking United Healthcare, the behemoth insurer, right?
That's correct.
So Tarek, I mean, help us. So he's credentialed with United Healthcare. What kind of stuff do you do now that you didn't do before? And what does payment look like? How does that even work?
There's the core services we do around vaccines and medication management. And when you start to bill medical insurances, there's oftentimes it's appropriate to assess that patient and have essentially an office visit tied to that encounter. So when you think of vaccines and dispensing a medication, they come in and they ask for something, a flu shot or a lisinopril. We give it to them and we do look at and make sure it's safe and appropriate, but that's essentially the encounter. It's a retail transaction and we get paid our reimbursement for that retail transaction. Once you're an in-network medical provider with appropriate software in place to be able to chart and submit your claims, which is tons of different solutions out there, and then some kind of a method, what I call RCM or revenue cycle management, to make sure those claims get paid, because medical claims pay different than prescription claims. If you have those two things in place, you can turn that flu shot request or that medication ask into a clinical encounter to assess a patient with diabetes or to look at all the vaccines that they might need, given where they work, their age, their health conditions, et cetera. And the act of doing that, that medical decision-making, is oftentimes a reimbursable service. And so if you chart appropriately and you pick the appropriate codes and ICD-10s, you can get reimbursed on top of selling your product as you traditionally would. In addition, you get paid for that clinical service.
And again, to be clear, the management of this process is not being done, at least at the current time, through the typical pharmacy management system. Is that correct? Where is this?
Yes.
Where's this?
They're using an EHR.
Say again?
They're using an EHR, an electronic health record.
Okay. And so the access to that for the pharmacy is through a web portal of some sort?
A link, yeah. And pharmacies across the nation, so Jeff's group, for example, don't all have EHRs. They have different documentation platforms across. Everybody uses something slightly different. We've got a few of his stores that are using our EHR and our RCM, but you can do this with any type of software that allows you to submit medical claims and have patient charting. But the first step is to know what services you're doing, which is, again, vaccines and medication management first and foremost. And then I see point of care being something that if we can consistently continue to implement across the country in pharmacies, patients will start to reliably expect it to be a service, just like they expect a flu shot to be at a community pharmacy. If we get pharmacies across the nation doing point of care, that's a very easy service to be able to do either cash-based or medical billing. Then you need to do credentialing, which is what we've created that solution for. Then you need to figure out what software you're going to use to chart and bill.
So, Jeff, I want to go back to you for a minute. So you called United Healthcare and developed a relationship, and this guy is allowing you to do this because he's a nice guy and he likes you, or why do you think they have accepted this opportunity to work with you? What's in it for them?
Well, we're working now. He is retired. We work with Angela or Angie. Basically what it's done is getting a network of pharmacies and having pharmacies in strategic places gives you, and it's a word I've worked my whole career for, and it's a word you can't really use, in certain situations, but it's given me some leverage. And leverage meaning that I have locations in areas that, you know, if we're not getting paid well, Bruce, we might just stop filling prescriptions. And then people start to listen. And it's taken me 20 years to get to this point, but we've had, we have two or three case studies here in the last 6 months where location and access has helped us move the needle on the reimbursement side. So I've worked with them. We were, I think this kind of trickled down to, we were doing some Hep C work and those patients, and we were losing our rear ends. And so I got a hold of her and their clinical pharmacy director. And I just said, guys, we can't do this anymore. You know, the state of Washington had a charge by the governor to, you know, eradicate hepatitis C. They had, you know, some discounts on purchasing the drugs from manufacturers, but yet we're still getting reimbursed at below cost to dispense. And so we went to her and said, you know what, I ain't doing this anymore. We, number one, it's a cash flow outlay. Number two, I'm losing money on a $30,000, you know, fill. And so she said, Jeff, well, let's talk through this. And then we got Tara plugged in and the team plugged in, and it's been a while, 18 months, you know, 12, 18 months, we've worked through this and got the contract in place. One, you know, to focus on immunization billing, maybe through the medical side, but two, to really try to develop out this Hep C program and be able to dispense. If we are losing a little bit of money on the dispense, we could bill for, you know, the patient visit, the consult and all of that, and get a reasonable reimbursement, maybe a few hundred bucks. We're still developing that because this is kind of a new landscape for them, because everything's in point of sale through Optum, which is their, you know, their PBM, you know, and or it's directed through fee for service, which is again underpaid, but you know, we're still developing out the exact how that reimbursement's going to go. We know what it looks like, but we're still developing that out, and so that is kind of how it came to a head. Was we weren't getting paid, and Jeff started to squawk.
And I would echo what he's saying. I do a lot of work in Oregon too. And in general, they want to help sustain and incentivize pharmacies to stay in business. And there's only so much they can do to change how much they pay per prescription. But they do have flexibility for them to be able to help supplement with the medical or the services side of payment to these pharmacies. And everybody wins. Patients have increased access to care. The payers typically have improvements in their population health and quality measures, and the pharmacies have additional revenue. And so that's exactly how the UHC group came about. He's got several stores in various pockets within Oregon managed cares that have got different payment models too. So they say, I want you to show up in both ways. I want to give you better reimbursement for prescription benefits, but also reimburse you better for clinical programs to offset the losses or the hardly break evens on the prescription side. Well, and they really haven't had a way to do it until you were in network and until you had a program in place to build for. And now that we've created that, we can use it in a whole new way.
Well, and you know, the summation of what I hear you both say is there is a patient need out there that the insurance companies can't manage without the help of participating pharmacies. So they're not doing it to be nice. They're doing it because it helps them manage their profitability and their patient care stuff. So the next piece of this, and this is one that still fascinates me, is how do we let patients know that they can get this kind of care at a pharmacy? That's just not something I think most patients would expect. So who wants to jump on that first, Jeff?
I'll jump on it from a higher level, and then Tara can maybe get in the weeds on it. But how I envision it, from an economist stand, pharmacy economist standpoint, would be, you know, we have a marketing team that can deliver messages in many ways. We do mailings, we do social media, we do, you know, obviously websites, we do a lot with our phone system, things like that, as well as just print material at the store. But I know in this particular case, you know, with United Health, and I've done something in the past with another group, is now that we're a partner with them, they'll do the marketing to the patients as well. And that really is probably what will move the needle, is they'll get a letter or they'll get some sort of a communication to them that just says, hey, Cascadia Pharmacy Group can now help you in this area. You know, here's their information. And so I think that the health plan itself will, you know, in partnership, in contract, will help market that, you know, and coming from them, you know, the patient will listen right away. And then cross-marketing with the stuff that we do.
That's brand new to me. Tara, you got any amplification on how that works?
Well, he stole my favorite one to use, is having the payers. Once you become an in-network provider, the payers actually can market you just like they do all the other provider types. And we've had really exciting breakthroughs doing that too. I think that's very effective. They also can market to providers too. So they have provider names that are typically the payers. So they not only can do patient advertising, but also local provider. So that's a big way. But what you asked, or go ahead.
I was going to say, they also will come out to these rural communities and do outreach programs, and and you do those in a partnership, you know, manner with co-branding. So, you know, I've done one of those way back, but I, you know, wasn't under contract then. So, you know, now
actually been doing that with some teeth. Others. That's a good idea too, Jeff. Yeah.
I just can't imagine what kind of prestige that brings to the pharmacy. And then I have to say, wow, isn't it nice for a patient to get a letter from their insurance company telling them to go to an independent rather than to transfer to their mail order service? So that's a real win. What do you want to add here that we haven't chatted about yet? Recognizing that our goal here is to let pharmacists know that good things are happening. People are finding ways to change the payment model. Jeff, you got any additional insights or something that I have overlooked on our outline that you want to throw in here?
Yeah, I do. surprise, surprise, right?
Yeah, good.
This is going to be a constantly evolving product, service, and yeah, it's hot as hot could be. But until there's some real dollars behind it and there's seemingly to come, you know, it's always going to be kind of pushing the shell around the top of the table. What I am starting to see though, is it's sad to even say this, but pharmacies is in as dire straits as it's ever been, with the closures of pharmacies, with the mergers, with the bankruptcies, with the workforce, you know, issues, all of that put together has put pharmacy finally in the light it needs both politically and locally. I just had a text yesterday. One of our board members was lobbying for NCPDP, and every single senator, congresswoman, congressman, you name it, that they met with, pharmacy was their number one topic. So that shows you right now that we are, unfortunately, it had to get to dire straits to put us on the forefront. But now I think we can control the narrative. And those pharmacies that are able to survive and have been able to run their business as well have an opportunity to get reimbursed better. And what I mean by that is we independent pharmacies are a top shelf product. We are a premium product. We give premium services. We give a variety of services that aren't given at the other at chains and retailers and grocery stores. And we are top shelf premium. And it's becoming apparent to a lot of people now that we are needed, and we're needed at a high level. And now that we can control that narrative, and with patient access and like our group, the conversation's a lot different around the reimbursement of the scripts too, because as I'd said before, I've sent when Jeff squawks and patient access can potentially get disrupted, we're moving the needle, Bruce. And unfortunately it had to get to the almost the basement, and we had to lose a lot of pharmacies, but I think we can rebuild that over the next 18 to 24 months. Once we get everybody on the same page that, hey, you know what, when you go buy a steak at a butcher shop, are you paying the same price for a select cut of meat that you are for a piece of prime? No, you're paying more dollars for that prime cut, and we're the prime cut.
Wow, nice analogy. Tara, I'm gonna wax eloquent at the end here. So what do you got to say?
I mean, I couldn't agree more with Jeff's what he stated, especially I think we saw during COVID, that's when we really saw how the independent pharmacies were nimble and really able to show up and deliver clinical programs. And I think that's really where I saw payers start to take notice too of the different opportunities of what they can do to improve access to care. And really, I really see this opportunity that we haven't really seen effectively tapped into yet, where we really enlarge groups like Cascadia Pharmacy Group are tapping into those alternative payment models where there's real dollars funding entire health systems. And if we can have pharmacists start to get paid for their everyday dispensing encounters to not just be about a medication that they're selling, but instead looking at that patient and working with their physician, talk to the patient about their over-the-counters, de-prescribing, having those types of components be billable, that's going to be really where you start to change the tide. And so the first step is really all of us as pharmacists to really start to show up and say, medical billing, it's very excited. Like he said, as hot as can be. It's been hot as can be for many, many years in pharmacy, but it still hasn't made the big revenue impact yet. We've got wins, but we don't have the big crazy wins that we want to see and we will see. And I think the biggest things we need are more patients being seen by pharmacies. And we need to get to a point where there's more pharmacies and network with plans so that they know independent pharmacies or generally community pharmacies can do this. Once those two things start to happen, that's when the rest of the things fall into play.
Well,
that's what I'm looking towards.
The need is clearly there.
Yes.
And the good news is the people in the insurance industry are starting to recognize that. The good news is it saves them money. I dare say, I don't know this, but when they pay a pharmacist for a service, they don't pay them the same they pay a doctor for the same service, I would suspect. Is that true? I mean, they save a little bit of money.
I think that's true. I mean, I don't know if Tara can talk more on that, but really what I wanted to comment on that, Bruce, was we're keeping them out of the emergency room. We're keeping them out of the urgent care. Okay. So yeah, the payment to the doctor versus the pharmacist, that's really not where the money savings is. Okay. The money savings is, number one, they're compliant. Number two, they're not going to the emergency room. Number three, they're living healthier. I mean, it goes on. And all those dollars trickle back to the plan big time.
Interesting. Yeah. Thank you for that clarification. Tara, you wanted to chime in?
Yeah. I mean, even something as simple as prescribing an over-the-counter medication to a patient with Medicaid, they will go to the emergency room to receive that prescription to get Tylenol for their kid.
Yeah,
a UTI. Those are one example. Another example is if they do have those good patient referral streams, somebody who's got diabetes or hypertension, they're able to have their values get in line with the quality measures. So one would be maybe A1C not greater than 9. With a pharmacist helping to manage them, the payers are going to have more patients in hitting their goals, and then the plan gets their large bonus payout. So in many ways, they're going to receive additional money versus saving money by paying them a different rate from the physician. It's that they've saved money from no emergency rooms, and then they've earned far greater money by the quality encounters from those frequent touches from those pharmacists that are seeing those complex patients in these rural communities.
Well, and thank you for those clarifications. I guess the other thing I wanted to emphasize, and we said it at the very beginning, this is no longer theory, supposition, or dreaming. This is happening. Admittedly, it's a trickle, not a tidal wave.
Not yet. We're almost there, though.
I'm reminded of a book I read about 10 years ago called The Tipping Point. And, you know, that's kind of where I am imagining we are, and what we're hoping we accelerate with this podcast is the more pharmacy owners who start joining these networks, getting credentialed, screaming at their healthcare plans, as Jeff has done, the faster this will happen. And the good news, it's happening. So I'm going to chime in with one final comment that goes back to something Jeff said at the very beginning that I feel very passionate about. there are a number of people who keep suggesting that pharmacists walk away from dispensing and migrate towards services of some sort, PGX consulting or whatever is commonly referred to. And, you know, that may be viable for some number of pharmacists, but I continue to believe that a pharmacist is a healthcare professional with an expertise in medications, and that as you're running a pharmacy, some percentage of the people who you deal with are going to need some of these services that we're talking about. And if it's 5% and you have 1,000 patients, then you've got 50 targets for the payment service. But if you've got 5,000 pharmacy patients, you've got, I can't do the math in my head what that is, but the point is
250.
Thanks, Jeff. The bigger the numerator is, the better the denominator is. And so I argue continue to hold on dispensing and position yourself as the resident in the community who knows and understands medications, how to deal with side effects and then how to deal with other treatments that make the medications work more effectively. So I'm going to let you guys have one more minute to say goodbye, and then we're going to close this thing. So Jeff, you go first, and then we'll close up with Tara.
Sure. Well, hey, we appreciate the opportunity to be on your podcast and to spread what we're doing and keep moving independent community pharmacy forward. I think that the momentum is on our side more than it ever has been. And actually, you know, as doom and gloom as DIR and all of that has been, I feel as positive as I have probably in the last 6 months here in the last, you know, month and a half of 24 for various reasons. So, you know, looking forward to the future and at least do our part and try to help others, you know, do their part as well. So thank you, Bruce.
Tara?
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. I couldn't agree more with your closing comment too, and what Jeff opened with on the medications and dispensing those medications. It's what gets all those patients in our door that allows us to see them regularly and impact their overall outcomes of care. And that's truly how we show our value as pharmacists. And unfortunately, we've come to the point where pharmacies are closing or they're staffed and so busy that they really just have to sell a product instead of manage a patient's health. And hopefully with this ability to be able to have organized clinical programs and in-network providers, they're able to really, truly start to impact patient care in a quality manner and receive reimbursement for it. So I'm excited, and I'm feeling optimistic as well for 2024.
Well, I'm honored to say I know both of you at least a little bit. And Jeff, again, thanks for your service to NCPA. Look forward to you taking the reins this October as the president of the organization. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, friends and neighbors, this is Bruce Neeland closing out another episode of Pharmacy Crossroads, where our goal is to help pharmacy owners do more and be better. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Pharmacy Crossroads. If you're interested in talking with Bruce, please contact the show. Visit pharmacycrossroads.com. We look forward to hearing from you.